Welcome back. This is Kevin Gorg. You have found Wooden Sticks here on the Talk North Podcast Network. Love connecting with some of my childhood heroes along the way with this project. And today is absolutely one of the names I wrote down at the top of the list. I was a goaltender as a kid. I collected hockey cards, and I was literally obsessed with the Minnesota North Stars. I grew up in Burnsville, so maybe 10, 12 minutes away from the Met Center. And Pete Lopresti was a goaltender for the North Stars in the mid to late 70s. So this is when I was a 7 or 8 year old kid. Remember the shoebox full of baseball and hockey cards and heading to the rink to watch the North Stars. They practiced over in that era in town, and you could sneak in to watch them practice at Burnsville Ice Center or Bloomington Ice Center and get up close and watch your heroes at the rink. Pete Lopresti was one of those guys, and he was a Minnesota guy. So for all of us, it was like, this guy made it. Like, he grew up in Minnesota, played high school hockey at Eveleth, and went on to play for the North Stars. So it gave us all hope, even though, let's be honest, for a lot of us, and I never ended up in the National Hockey League, most of us didn't, it was a dream that never was fulfilled. But this guy did it. He played D1 hockey at Denver, and he played for the North Stars in an era where maybe they weren't very good on the ice. They had some tough years in that time before they merged with the Cleveland Barons. And I think everything changed once that happened, but he was teammates with Lou Nanny, Tom Reed, Bill Goldsworthy, Cesar Maniago is one of his goaltending partners, along with the Gumper, Gump Worsley, who played without the mask, Henry Boucher. I mean, these are legends of the game. And for all of us as North Star fans, I vividly remember in my hockey card collection, how much I coveted cards that were of goaltenders. And if they were North Star goalies like Pete Lopresti, I'd go bonkers for them. And I probably made some horrible trades, right? When you're a kid in Burnsville and you have a chance to get a Pete Lopresti in game action with the big white mask and the green and gold sweater, yeah, you're going to give up a Bobby Orr for that because you're a goalie. And I did it. And it'll be really fun to connect with Pete today. Oh, by the way, his dad was a legendary NHL goalie for the Chicago Blackhawks. And 80 saves in one game for Sam Lopresti, his father. They became the first father-son to both play in the NHL, which was pretty cool. And Pete played a handful of years for the North Stars, ended his career in Edmonton. But the hockey ties to Eveleth, to the Denver Pioneers, who just won their 10th national championship. And also, Pete played in the 1976 Canada Cup. And I hope he can put it into perspective what a big deal the Canada Cup was. And yes, that was before the Miracle on Ice in 1980. And the Olympics, I think, took on a different feel, especially here in the States, after what Herb Brooks and that team did. But for the best hockey in the world, the 72 and 76 Canada Cup are unmatched. And I've heard this from Lou Nanny, from Tom Reed, and from anybody that lived in that era. Pete Lopresti played in the 1976 Canada Cup. So we're going to go behind the mask and find out what that was like. Wait to hear some of the legends that were involved in that game at the Montreal Forum. Yes, the hockey mecca that was. So really cool conversation. And if you grew up like me, a fan of the North Stars, or maybe you're younger and maybe want to understand what the North Stars were all about over in Bloomington at the Met Center, where that Mall of America is now, it still breaks my heart to think about it. And I still cheer against the Dallas Stars every single chance I get, including in this year's playoffs. They ripped our hearts out when they left. We've got the Wild now, and that's fantastic. But we're going to head back to the 1970s and catch up with Pete Lopresti, Eveleth High School, Denver Pioneer, and yes, Minnesota North Star later today on Wooden Sticks. Now, fans, when you think of the Freemasons, I bet you think of the secret handshakes, the unusual hats, and of course, those pancake breakfast. Minnesota Masonic Charities would prefer that you think about the work that they do here in our community. Places like the Masonic Cancer Center at the U of M, the Masonic Children's Hospital, and of course the Masonic Home in Bloomington. They are just a few examples of the important work that the Freemasons support right here in Minnesota. As part of the largest fraternal organization in the world, Masons have consistently answered the call when it comes to charitable needs. I'm so happy that Minnesota Masonic Charities has chosen Wooden Sticks as a place to help spread the word. I look forward to great conversations and learning more about all the great work they do here in the weeks to come on this show. Also want to thank our good friends at Beta Bay Boat Club. Spring is finally here, and if you live in Minnesota like most of us do, you cherish the change of seasons. And I love all four. And being a hockey guy, you know, winter's probably at the top of my list. But when hockey's not going on, I love to get outside. And Beta Bay Boat Club has you covered. For 24 years, your home right here on Lake Minnetonka. What a great spot come spring and summer. It gives you that country club boating experience. Memberships are available right now. Call them at 952-401-3880 or head to betabayboatclub.com. That's Beta Bay Boat Club, and get out on the water this summer. You can be a part of the show as well. We'd love to elevate your place, your spot, and bring business to you. Karen Cleary can get that done. It's K-C-L-E-A-R-Y, K Cleary at TalkNorth.com. When we return here on Wooden Sticks, we go back to the 70s and we go behind the mask with the great Pete Lopresti. All right, we're back on Wooden Sticks and really excited to be joined by a fellow former goalie, one of my childhood heroes. Pete Lopresti played for the North Stars back in the late 1970s, played at Eveleth High School, went on to play for the Denver Pioneers. Yeah, those Denver Pioneers, the one that just won their 10th national championship. Pete, it's great to have you on Wooden Sticks.
Kevin, the pleasure is all mine. I'm glad you mentioned that my Pioneers did win their 10th, and I repeat, 10th NCAA. I didn't win any, but I got to the finals, but we had to help a guy from Minnesota, Dean Talfus, win his first. So, you know, always help.
Denver's always in the mix, though. Always in the mix. Tremendous program. And even though we didn't have any local flavor as far as the teams go at the Frozen Four in St. Paul, it was great to see some of the classic programs like Michigan, Boston College, Denver, BU. It really turned out to be a fantastic weekend. And for all of us here in North Star country, kind of a sad week, Pete. We just got the news today as we record on Wednesday that the longtime soundtrack, the voice of Minnesota North Stars hockey, Al Shaver, passed away up in Vancouver at the age of 96. I'm just curious, being that you played, you weren't like me, huddled around a transistor radio listening to every single game, but how much interaction and how well did you know Al Shaver?
Al was just a friend of mine. In fact, a high school classmate of mine just told me this about a half hour ago. And Al was the best, not only as an announcer, as a human being. He was always around. He was just a funny guy. He enjoyed, he walked into a room and just knew he enjoyed what he was doing. And he was always very nice to me, even on the bad nights. I told him, I says, "You're way too nice to me." He says, "Well, why wouldn't I be?" Even when you had a rough game, he was pretty good to the guys. But he called it like he saw it, and he was well respected by all the players. And Al had a great deal when we used to go on the road and go, let's say, go to L.A. You know, back then when they served you the full meal with a little glass of, you know, a little bottle of wine and all that. Al, there were rules we couldn't have any alcohol on the plane, so we'd always pass up our little bottles of wine up to Al. And let's just put it this way. Al was feeling okay when we got off the plane, and I think he appreciated that. Great guy. Just a great, great human being.
And so talented. I mean, I just look back at my days and, you know, how I landed where I did in the world of broadcasting, listening to him call those games. And, you know, I think people forget, you know, nowadays every single game is on TV if you follow your favorite hockey team like the Minnesota Wild. But back in the 70s and 80s, you know, a lot of those games, especially the home games, weren't on TV, and for a long while, the radio's all we really had. And so we all, as hockey fans, literally would huddle around. I'll never forget it because the North Stars had a lot of 8:05 starts, and I was a young kid. And so I literally would start, you know, doing my homework, having the radio on, and, you know, by the time they got to the second intermission, I was tucking into bed, but I wasn't falling asleep. I was going to listen to Al Shaver call the rest of that hockey game, and it was a big part of our life. If you were a North Star fan, Al Shaver was in your house on a nightly basis.
Not a question. And again, growing up in northern Minnesota, up in Eveleth, you know, and the North Stars came in because they even came up there and they played an exhibition game up in Eveleth against St. Louis their first year. And then they were in Duluth one year and they played the Blackhawks. And, you know, so there was this, they were larger than life. And then to hear him call the games, and you didn't really appreciate it, how good he was. until after I probably got done playing. I'd listen to the games and I said, I don't know how he keeps up with it. As you well know, Kevin, it's not easy to call a hockey game. There's so much stuff going on and it's so fast. And he was as professional as you possibly can get. And I don't know. I know there's a lot of great ones, but I'll tell you, tough to beat him. He was one of a kind.
Yeah, in my mind, the best I've ever heard, and maybe I'm biased because of the North Star angle, but rest in peace to Al Shaver, and fun to have somebody like Pete LaPresti on the day that worked alongside of him at those days in the Met Center. And, you know, you're from Eveleth. I don't think anyone's surprised that you turn out to be a hockey player when you grow up in hockey country, you know, the home of the United States Hockey Hall of Fame, but you became a goalie. And I think that's where I want to start the conversation today. How did you, Pete, become a goaltender? I think the hockey part of it's easy, but becoming a goalie, especially when your dad was an NHLer and probably tried to talk you out of it. How did that happen?
Well, you're exactly right, Kevin. He did try to talk me out of it. I really, I guess I just wanted to play. And I told him, I was probably 6 years old, 7 years old. And, you know, you're skating, you know, then like we all did. I mean, that's all we did up north, to go skate out in the rinks and all that. And I told him, Dad, you know, I'd like to be a goaltender. And he says, no, you don't. You don't, really. No, I said, no, I'd really like to be a goaltender. No, you don't, really. So he figured this might pass because he couldn't quite get it through my thick skull even back then. He says, you don't want to get into this. But I kept on him, and he says, okay, here's the deal. And he owned a little – he was a partners in a little tavern over in actually in Virginia. And he says, listen, this is the way it's going to work. If you want to be a goaltender, I'm not going to stand in your way. I'll help you out. But I'll buy you your own equipment because I don't want you to get hurt. And I don't want you to, you know, and all that. But once you're in, I don't want you coming back to me in a month or two and say you're done because I can't afford it as it is. So that was the deal. And I never looked back. And people say, oh, my goodness, must have been great to have your daddy, you know, former player and all that. And I said, well, you know what? He taught me two things, just to stand there and play the angle. That was it. And you better go. The rest is on you. You better learn how to skate and all. It was very simple. And that's basically it. And he never really, I guess I didn't take really great advantage of all his, you know, he probably knew a lot more than I did, but it all worked out, I guess.
It did work out. And you guys became the first father and son to have both played goal in the National Hockey League. He had 80 saves in a game, a record 80 saves in a 3-2 loss to Boston when he played for Chicago. So, Pete, how much pressure was there once you kind of got into it and started to understand as you got older, maybe when you were in junior high and into high school, just how good your dad was to have one person in the family end up in the bigs in the NHL? How much pressure was there on you to become, you know, like your dad, that type of goalie?
Well, you got to understand, he wasn't the only one coming out of there. That's the scary part. I mean, you had Frank Brimsek, who's probably the best U.S.-born goaltender ever. He was there. You had Mike Karakas, who played for Chicago, who won the Stanley Cup with Chicago, I think at 39 or 38. You know, and then my dad and John Mariucci. And, you know, then there's John Matchifs and Mayasich and Eichel. I mean, it was a who's who. I mean, you didn't even realize it. So my biggest goal was to play for Eveleth High School. That was my goal. I never looked past that. And I said, if I can play for Eveleth High School, then everything else will just figure it out from there. But, you know, it was just, there was pressure playing in Eveleth because there was quite a history, a lineage on the way up there, you know, for a lot of people you had to follow the footsteps to. And that was probably the pressure, if you want to call it. But we never even looked at it that way, you know. We just looked at it as playing hockey and let's go play, see what happens.
I was lucky enough way back in the mid-80s when I was a high schooler to play kind of an all-star game up at the Eveleth Hippodrome. And honestly, I got chills walking in that building. And, you know, it's just an iconic rink. For you as a youngster, for people that maybe haven't been up there, try to explain the Eveleth Hippodrome.
Well, you know, they just had their 100th anniversary, I think it was 2 years ago. And I'm thinking, here's a building that's 100 years old, and the people who have played hockey, you know, like I say, everything from the professional teams, the North Stars, and you had guys like Bobby Clark and Reggie Leach come in here as juniors. They were young kids. And just a who's who. And you walked in there, and I always put the scenario of when you walked into the old Montreal Forum, the first time I walked into there, and it just smelled hockey. I don't know. I don't know how else to explain it. I'm sure it's like somebody walking into Yankee Stadium the first time. You know, it's just one of those iconic buildings that, and then you walked in, you saw the pictures on the walls of, you know, Mariucci and Willard Eichel and John Mayasich and guys like that, and my dad and Brimsek and all these other guys. And you say, my goodness gracious, in this little town and this beautiful building. I mean, and it was a big thrill for us to play inside on Saturday mornings. That was our time to play once a week. Then we go play outside somewhere else in another neighborhood or outside of Evelyn. So you play two games on Saturday. But you always get that first game on Saturday morning as a kid. And that was a big, big thrill.
We have that in common. I played partially outdoors and indoors when I played. You know, I played my youth hockey in the late 70s and then my high school hockey in the 80s. And for a goalie, I don't think people understand the difference. When you play outdoors and the pucks are just a little more frozen, right? And your gear is just a little colder. I don't think anybody really understands the torture that it was to be a goalie in practice outdoors.
Oh, it was lovely, wasn't it? But you actually had the cage, though. You were probably at the cage time by then, right?
Yep.
See, I had the old plastic, you know, on the form for the mask. So you want to take one off the pumpkin at 20 below zero, and the wind's blowing out the north in northern Minnesota in January. That was fun. But you know what? You didn't know any better, I guess. And being a goaltender, you got to play all the time against all these kids from high school down to your age. And so that, you know, you didn't even think about it. But that puck got very hard real quick. My goodness. Oof.
Those outdoor practices were tough. I'm going to tell you, they were tough. I don't miss them at all.
No.
So when did you start to realize, you know, maybe it wasn't until high school, but I think if you're a goalie on the team in Eveleth, you probably know you're halfway decent, right? But when did you start to realize, Pete, that maybe Division I hockey and, you know, that dream of professional hockey? I think every kid, you know, grows up thinking, oh, I'm going to put the skates on and maybe someday I can be, you know, what for you would be your dad, right? Or some of the great goaltenders you mentioned. But for all of us, like that dream of being in the NHL, when did you start to realize that, you know, as a youngster, that you might have the talent to take you beyond Eveleth?
Well, as far as the professional part, I had no inclination I could ever get to that level. Never crossed my mind, even when I got to college, because it was such a big jump from high school to college back then. I mean, there was nobody went to juniors. You came in as a freshman and you're playing against guys that are, you know, 24 years old, 23, 24 years old. These are real men, and the puck went faster and stuff you could pull off in high school, like maybe cheating a half a step because you could maybe catch the puck. You know, that didn't work anymore. I learned that real quick. And even after I got drafted, it was not a big deal. I mean, okay, fine. Minnesota took you in Houston or took me in another round. And, oh, okay. I had all intentions of going back to Denver. But, you know, I was still pinching myself, I think, even after I signed it. I remember sitting in the North Star dressing room during the first training camp. And I came to camp with no equipment besides my skates. Nothing. So Doc Rose, who was our trainer, equipment guy. There were only two guys back then, him and Denny Kovac. I mean, that's all they did. Those two ran the whole thing. And he says, where's your equipment? I says, well, I got a pair of skates. He says, you got to be kidding me. So he goes into the equipment room, gets brand new everything, gloves, pads. Now, back then, you know what I'm talking about. The pads were like two pieces of cardboard. I mean, and they were heavy. And they were, you know, there's no form to them. So you strap them on, and I'm going to go to my first professional practice. That puck's bouncing off on like they're being shot out of a cannon. You know, nice rebound control. You know, you try to catch the puck, the glove wouldn't close, you know, so you're just slapping them down. Really impressive. So we get through that mess, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking around, and I says, and he said the guys who were talking about Al Shaver, he's discussed, you know, Billy Goldsworthy, the Goldie Shuffle, Maniago to save, all that. And I'm sitting with these guys. I said, what am I doing here? How did I get here? It was like a Twilight Zone deal, you know? And it was bizarre. I wish I could tell you, you know, when I was in 10th grade or 11th grade, I said, you know what? I think I can play professional hockey. I said, I don't even know if I can play for Eveleth High School, you know? But, and then back then, it kind of opened up because back, I believe in 68 or 69, I think it was 69, Keith Magnuson and Cliff Coral, two former Denver Pioneers, they went and played, and they're playing for the Blackhawks and with Tony Esposito, who played at Michigan Tech. And those three guys came in at the same time with Chicago. And they went from last place to first place. They won their division. And Esposito, I think, set the record for the most shutouts at the time. Anyway, it opened the door for a lot of college players because all of a sudden now the pros are looking at the college and says, hey, maybe these guys can play, you know. And that kind of opened up the floodgates. Then the WHA came in, and now you need players. And and it just kind of happened where my timing was in. You know, Worsley Gump was at his end. He had retired, I think. Yeah, he retired. And they had just traded the goaltender who they thought was going to take the place of Monty Alvarez, Jilly Gilbert. He went to Boston.
That's so right.
They were in a pinch, kind of, so they figured. And the plan was for me to play a year in the minors and then, the next year go play, and then Maniago had kind of a deal worked out where he'd end his career in Vancouver. But as fate has it, the backup goaltender, Fern Rivard, got hurt, and I got called up, and that's it. The rest is kind of history.
Well, I got to ask you about Fern Rivard because I travel with one of your former teammates and Tom Reed, the Silver Fox. And as you know, Tom can spin a yarn and tell a story or two. And I'm a pretty gullible guy, Pete. And he has told me numerous times, and I think he's telling the truth, and I need you to verify this. And I hope his family's not listening. But according to Tom Reed, Fern Rivard, I don't want to say he refused, but he didn't like to shower much. Is that true? I get it.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Okay, you get it? Okay.
Yeah, Tom has told me numerous times what a character he was.
He was a great guy. He was.
That's what he said. He loved him. I mean, Tommy loved him. He just didn't want to room with him. And the personalities, I looked at some of the early rosters when you played for the North Stars. You mentioned Bill Goldsworthy. How about Henry Boucher? Yep. The aforementioned Tom Reed, the great Lou Nanny. I mean, you guys had some real characters on these teams. And for a young guy like you that, by the way, grew up in Minnesota, you know, probably following the North Stars from Eveleth, and these are big names in the game of hockey. That had to be really fun to be just, you know, a fly on the wall, much less a teammate in that locker room.
Well, yeah, it's surreal. I mean, you just walk in, he says, are you kidding me? And they were just, and, you know, I look back and how lucky I was to have played with those gentlemen. And I use that word gentlemen because they were just unbelievable to me. I mean, yeah, they'd play the little pranks and stuff on you and J.P. Parisi and Goldsworthy and Juju. And I always remember Drew and Parisi, they never shut up during practice on you. They just, I don't know. And it wasn't like they're giving you the business. They just like giving me the needle. And it was all in fun. And I didn't, and then they got traded and all that. But I look back and I even with J.P. we talk, and it seemed like I played with him a lot longer than I did. It seems like years. And I always told him, he says, you know, it was only a few months, but boy, it's a good thing you got traded because I don't know if I could have taken it, you know, because, you know, it's probably 4 or 5 months and it seems like 4 or 5 years, my goodness. But they were just outstanding. But they made it clear, you know, you got to understand. These guys, a lot of them left home as a young age to play junior hockey. And then when the NHL goes from 6 teams to 12, that's their opportunity. And they weren't going to give up their job. But once you're in, you're in. You're part of the family. But you're going to have to earn it. There were no gimmies. And they made that clear in training camp. You're not taking this job from me, kids. So you got to earn it. But they were fantastic. And to this day, like Tommy and Louie and those guys are just top-notch.
I had a brief phone conversation with Louie this week. And of course I mentioned that you and I'd be connecting to do some work here on Wooden Sticks. And Louie right away had a big, you know, chuckle and a smile, of course, from a distance, said, make sure you tell Pete I say hi. And he also wanted me to ask you about one of your goaltending partners over the years, Gary the Axe Smith. He wants to know if you remember what he did between periods of every game.
I know exactly what he did. I remember the first, let me give you, during training camp, you're kind of split into two different groups. So it's not like you spend a lot of time with a guy, and I heard about the trade. They had traded him. It was in the summer, and somebody said, "This guy's a beauty. You might have trouble with this guy." So I, whatever. But he was a good goaltender. I mean, he was like in the top three or four guys. And how we ever, well, I find out in the end how we got it, but that's another story. And they said, "He's nuts. The guy's completely insane." I said, "Well, we'll find out." So anyway, first game we're playing, it's in New York. We're playing the Rangers and he's starting. And this is the first opening night. And we go through, we're in the town early and we go out to dinner, come back. And Teddy Harris is coaching. I'm walking through the lobby. He says, "Where's Smith?" I says, "He just walked into the restaurant. He should be right behind me, 10 minutes, you know, fine, mm-hmm. whatever." Well, I don't know. I hardly know this guy, but we're rooming together. Nice guy. So we go up to the room, blah, blah, blah. I'm in sitting there and the phone rings. It's like 5 minutes after so-called curfew. And it's Teddy. He says, "Where's Gary?" I says, "You know what? I just heard one of the guys just came in. He's probably right down the hall. Well, have him call me when he gets in." Okay. Well, he's not coming. I don't know where he is. 20 minutes later, get the same call. Same thing. I said, "Well, he's in the bathroom." Now I'm really scrambling. This guy's got to show up or we're going to have a crap show going on as it is. So he comes in. Smith walks in and I says, "Gary, Jesus, you got to call Teddy. He's looking for you. He's been calling." "Oh, is that right?" And I don't know this guy. I'm serious. I hardly know this guy. He grabs the phone and all of a sudden he starts reading a riot act to Teddy.
"Oh,
you so-and-so, you're the worst coach in the NHL. You're this, you are a rotten player. You're overrated, blah, blah. You think you're so tough, come on up." And it's going, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? This guy's a lunatic. So I'm sitting there and I'm like almost covered. I'm almost in a fetal position in my bed. I said, "Oh my God, this is out of control." So about 10 minutes, he slams the phone down and he sits in his bed and he's doesn't say a word. And I'm thinking, "Oh my, what do I do? I have no idea what to do." And finally he says, "What's the matter with you?" To me, I said, "Well, gee, don't you think you went a little off the rails?" He says, "Ah, I didn't talk to him. I saw Teddy down in the lobby on the way up here." He set me up. I said, "You know, if I had a Rapala..." He set that Rapala so far down, I could never get anyone.
He had to hook line and sinker.
Oh, it was the best. Well, anyway, we go to play the game. He's playing against the Rangers, and we're playing well, blah, blah, blah. He comes in between the first period. Next thing I know, he's taking off his equipment. I says, "Oh, my God, this guy's bailing. He's gone." And I don't know why. Is he hurt, whatever? Takes right, boom, gone. Goes to the shower. You hear the shower running? He says, "Oh, now I got to play, blah, blah, blah." Next thing I know, he comes back, puts all the equipment on, out the thing. Every period, he took off his equipment, took a shower, put it back on. It's almost like he had a zipper on it, like a costume. It was unbelievable.
It's insane because that's a lot of equipment to take on and off.
Yeah, yeah. And back then, there was all straps and, you know, not clips and all that stuff. Oh, yeah, he was a beauty. I could go on for hours with that guy. Oh my God, he was the most fun guy.
So on one end, you got Fern Rivard, who never showers. On the other one, you got Gary the Axe, who showers every intermission. Goalies, I hate to say it, goalies are nuts, and we can both obviously open up about that because we're part of the fraternity. And how much do you remember about your first game in the league, like the first real NHL game? I can't imagine the butterflies for you, Pete. What was that experience like?
I was rooming with Murray Oliver. I'm going to play in Buffalo. This is when they had the French Connection.
Oh, they were good.
They were very good. And that little auditorium was almost like playing Chicago Stadium, real tight, little mm-hmm. rink, you know, and all that. And you know, it was surreal. But we're going flying to Buffalo, and you know, back in the day, it's not like now all the security and all, and there are no charters. But so we're getting on the plane. We get into the hotel room, and Murray, another class act, we get into the room, and he's got this little suitcase. It's overnight thing, you know. Puts it on the thing, opens it up, and there's a bottle of, I don't know, what is he drinking, scotch or bourbon or something. He puts that on the table with two glasses. He pours two glasses. And he says, "Okay, kid, you start your career tomorrow. Time we have a drink." I says, "Mr. Oliver, with all due respect, I don't think that's a good idea. I think I'm going to have enough on my shoulder before I don't drink in scotch, and two, I don't think that's a good idea." And then we did, and he had a drink and all that. But I still remember Richard Martin, who was a wing on that line with Gilbert Perreault and who's the other guy? It doesn't matter. Anyway, he shot one. I had never seen a guy shoot a puck that fast in my life. I'm still looking for it 50 years after the fact. And I said, oh, my God, I don't know how this is going. You know, back then it was just stand out there and hopefully it hits you. You know, it wasn't, there was nothing. You just don't get killed. And he hit that thing. And but we played, I played pretty well. So, I didn't think I didn't belong. Because you go through a training camp and stuff like that, but it was the speed and the passing really was crazy to me. How fast it was, that was the biggest thing. But
I just look at your time with the North Stars, Pete. You know, these were some years where you didn't have a great team in front of you. Let's just leave it at that. I mean, I watched a lot of
the games.
They were
the lean years. I call them the lean years.
I guess the silver lining is you were a pretty important part of any win, because if you're a goalie on these teams, you pretty much had to go out there and stand on your head to get the 2 points. And so for a young goalie that was trying to find his way in the NHL, playing for the hometown team, it had to be both, I think, uplifting in that you were so important to the team, but also with the way that the team played a lot of times, it had to be frustrating.
You know, it was a situation. I remember getting my first paycheck, which was a lot smaller than the ones they get now.
Yeah.
And I said, they're going to pay me to do this? This is something I've been doing since I was 6 years old, you know? Yeah. And it was just crazy. And back then they used to put the checks in an envelope and put it right in your locker. It was kind of crazy. You know, I said, here you guys,
sure.
You know, some of the boys are making pretty good money. I say, you know, I'm just happy to be here. And I just looked at it as an honor and a privilege to be playing at this level. And you never realized it then. You know, years later, you say, my God, you look back at all the teams and all the players and you said, you know what? You had a little taste, you know, kudos. But it was surreal. It was just crazy. And again, yeah, we the lean years. But again, I look back and you played enough over the years, everybody. You know, games come and go, you know, and you remember a handful or whatever, but the thing you remember are the people you played it with. And yeah. I was very, very fortunate all those years that I had great teammates. I never had a problem with any of them. And I just look back, and even to this day, like you mentioned Tommy and Louie and those guys, and it's always fun to get together the few times you see each other and stuff like that. That's the magic of it. It's the players and the camaraderie and all the baloney that goes on behind the scenes. You know, hockey's hockey. You know, you get pucks at puck, you hit the goalpost, guy goes down, scores.
I miss it, though. I miss, like, the bus rides, the time in the locker room. That, to me, is the heart and soul of the game, right? I grew up with the same group of guys. We played played youth hockey together, yep. Played high school hockey together. I'm still in touch with a lot of these guys. I the games were great. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I miss those times. Those were the best times when you're with the group of guys, all the jokes you tell, all the fun stories. We're hearing some of them today on the show. That's what I miss.
Well, then, and then you've got the bonus not to win a championship or whatever. That makes it that much more special. That's something that goes on forever. And, you know, you can needle guys to the day you die, you know. And as you get older, the stories get a little more convoluted. I don't think it happened that way. Oh, yes, it did. You know, then you got to get into that argument. But, in your case, you know, I never had that. I never got to that point. But it is, you're right. It's all the other stuff in. You know, you spend enough time with Mr. Reed, so I don't have to explain that. And he could go on for hours. And he's the best. Oh, my. And he was one of those guys. I don't know if he's ever mentioned this. I'm going to give you a little secret. He's the one that caused a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Drama.
There you go. Thank you. But you could never catch him.
No.
You knew he did it. You're almost 99% sure, but you're not quite 100% sure. And you don't want to open up that can of worms. Because you're not that good, and he'd get even. You'd never get even with him. That's how good he was.
And he's still that guy, Pete.
Sure he is.
On the charters, like, there's always a prank at some point on the airplane, and you don't want to accuse him. You know it's him. Like, he is still that guy.
Well, that's good. I'm glad he hasn't lost it. That's good. That's a good thing.
In the 70s and 80s especially, you know, hockey cards were a big deal. I collected them. All my buddies collected them. For you, though, Pete, eventually there came a time when you got to see your own Pete LaPresti hockey card. I know because I had it. I had multiple. I loved the goalie cards. That was the cards I coveted more than any other cards, especially if they were action shots. So when you got your first NHL hockey card, I can't imagine how excited you were.
Well, there's a little story to that. I'm glad you asked. My first hockey card, they take a picture of you, and I don't remember them taking the picture. Well, it was just before training camp. You walk in and all that, and I had kind of like a scar on my forehead, okay? And over all the years, I always said I got into a, it happened in training camp in a pucker. I make up some story because I was too, well, let's just be embarrassed to tell the real story. Well, the real story was I was riding a bicycle up in northern Minnesota about a week before camp. And it was up in, we had a little lake place up on Lake Vermilion up in by Tower, Minnesota. And I'm riding this on the bike and all that. And I hit, and I get off the road. There's a car coming. So I get off the road and I get into the gravel on the side. And I, and the bike basically flips me into the ditch. Technically, I fell off my bike. That's basically in a nutshell. But I don't think that would have really impress the boys if I said, what happened? Well, I fell off my bike and you're going to be our goaltender. That's just great. Can't even ride a bike. How are you going to stop a puck, you know? So right. For years and years, I nobody really knew. And then I finally had to fess up. I couldn't.
Oh, man. The bike.
But that's my first card. If not, I probably can find you one.
Oh, they're the best. And I vividly remember I was into artwork and, you know, I had, you know, these model airplane paints, and I would do these. I'd always want to paint the goalie, and I was obsessed with hockey, and I wanted to be a goalie, and I was a kid. And I remember you had that white mask, and with the old North Star sweater with the distinct green and gold. That white mask really popped.
Right.
Who designed? Did you design your own masks? How did that work? Because now, I mean, it's a whole different world now with the artwork that's done. Back when you know you were transitioning from the Gump Worsley days, which you mentioned already, where some of the guys were nuts enough to go out there without a helmet or mask. It just started, I think, when you played in the league. So who designed that mask?
Well, when I started playing right from the get-go, I'd wear a form-fit mask. I mean, there were no bars or anything like that. In fact, my first one was made by a former Eveleth High School hockey coach who ended up playing in the 56 Olympics. John Matchiffs, who's on the, you know, he's always in the top 10 high school players ever and all that. And he coached at Colorado College and Air Force. Well, anyway, he was the high school coach and he did my first one, which is basically just a plastic mask. That was it.
Yep.
And then you put a helmet on it. And then that went all the way through high school. In fact, in high school, I made my own in one of the shop classes. I got an A on that, I'll let you know.
That's great.
And so I wore that all the way through high school till my first year in college. And then they came out with the more than one piece so you didn't have to wear a so-called regular, like a Cooper helmet or something over it. It was all one piece. And that thing must have weighed 40 pounds. My God, that was a piece of junk the guy made. But anyway, then I got to Minnesota and a gentleman from, I think it was Roseville that made that one. And he made me two of them, and they were just fantastic. But they were heavy, but they did the job. You know, you get hit a few times, but not that often, and I never got cut or anything like that. So did his job.
You felt it, though. I mean, you had to feel it. It's form fit.
Yeah, you'd feel them, yeah. But you know what? You talk about equipment, and in the day and age, and you've seen this stuff way more than I have up close and how light and all this stuff. But I'll tell you, the biggest thing to me is, yeah, the weight of the pads is one thing. But that upper body protection, my goodness gracious, the stuff we wore was just basically
like a sweatshirt.
Felt. It was a sweatshirt. Yeah, you're exactly what you wore. You know exactly.
And I wore
it.
And I try to explain to people, like I had this conversation with a couple of the Wild goalies this year. I was talking to Gustafson and Fleury about my, I was looking at their equipment after practice. I'm like, listen, you don't understand. Like we had, it was a thick sweatshirt type of material. And when I would take my gear off, I would have black and blue and red marks up and down my arms. Like you wore whatever you had during practice, you wore it home on your arms and you were covered in welts. It was a completely different set of equipment.
It was, I first time I had seen it, it was out at the University of Denver a couple of years back. They had some kind of a 70-year reunion. So we went out there, a couple of us, and I'm walking through that dressing room. I'm looking at, you know, this, it's like Kevlar. I mean, you could shoot bullets at this stuff.
Right.
And I remember going to a Wild game and sitting behind, about 10 rows up behind a goal, and I can't remember who shot it. One of those one-timers from, you know, 30 feet, and it hit the goaltender up by the, you know, the shoulder, and he didn't even flinch. I'm 10 rows back. I'm ready to jump out of my chair. I'm feeling it. I said, how is this guy going to get up to eat my, I would have broken my shoulder.
For sure. Know?
And I remember when I got there, and Maniago had, you know, it was all the same stuff. There was nothing fancy. He had stuff on top of his. And I said, what the hell is he wearing? But, you know, he said, enough of this. And then I finally learned. Then towards the end, you know, I think John Brown came up with some stuff, which was pretty good, but nothing like it is today. That to me is the biggest thing. Yeah, the gloves, okay, they're bigger, the pads, but that thing, that, you know, like you say, I was black and blue from, you know, first day of practice to the end of the season. It was brutal.
Yeah, they don't feel it. I mean, honestly, from talking to the guys now, they don't feel it. When you watch Marc-Andre Fleury, what impresses you the most? Is he's going to come back for another year now with the Wild at age 40, Pete? I can't fathom how he is able to be out there and look and play as young as he looks, even though he's going to be 40.
Well, you know, when you hear he's going to be 40, I said, boy, they should do a picture of Gump Worsley at 40 and Marc-Andre Fleury at 40. Two different animals, two different eras. But both Hall of Famers, they'll both be Hall of Famers. And, you know, Worsley's probably got more Stanley Cups. How ironic is that? But anyway.
Crazy.
I don't know. And the speed of the game and at that age to do what he does is simply phenomenal. People have no idea how tough that is. I can't even comprehend that at that age.
And yeah, he's an impressive guy.
Yeah, he's it's fun to watch, you know, and it's fun to watch sometimes he throws some of the old school stuff at these young guys and, you know, with the poke checks and, you know, he'll try to bait them into different things. It's, he's interesting to watch and he's not too bad either.
He's okay. Yeah. He's held his own and he's still got it, by the way. I marvel at the way he has kept himself in condition to keep up with these kids.
Well,
these days.
That's phenomenal. Let me give you a quick Gump Worsley story.
Yes.
My first training camp. Okay, you know, Gump, I think, had 1 year left on a contract because he probably didn't want to play in the North Star. Says, you know what, yeah, we understand, you know, because it was towards the end. Maniago used to tell me stories. And anyway, so he's in the stands and he's the so-called scout goalie coach. And there was really I never had a coach in college or anything besides yourself and figure it out. And he's up there and I'm thinking, oh my God, and, you know, he'd be sitting up there. I still remember him and Mariucci and all these guys be sitting up in the stands and they'd be watching and he had a cup of coffee and have the heater going. He'd be having the cigarette going and watching. Never said a word. Second day goes by, nothing. Third day, finally, he comes down to the player's bench and he calls me over. And I'm so excited that I'm going to talk to Gump Worsley. I was ready to get a sheet of paper and start writing down stuff because I'm going to learn more in the next 10 minutes I have in 20 years. I'm 20 years old. And I get there, and the first thing out of his mouth, and this is true, I will swear on a stack of Bibles, Pete, I've been watching you for 3 days. You're working too hard. True story. I said, and I've never had anybody tell me that. Not that I didn't work hard. I always, whatever. But I never had a coach tell me you're working too hard. And I kind of give it that look, and he's looking at me. He says, let me tell you, you went to college, didn't you? I says, yeah, I was there a couple of years. He says, well, you're a lot smarter than the rest of these. Just think, a guy like me, I fooled him for 20-some years. Look at me. I fool these guys. All you have to do is stand there and they will hit you. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? He says, you're smarter than them. All you got to do, they can only do a couple of things. They're not that smart. Just as he gets it out of his mouth, a couple of guys run into each other and there's sticks and gloves all over the ice. And these two guys, he says, I rest my case. And I swear to God, that's the last time he ever talked about hockey. The rest of the time I was in Minnesota. Never said another word about goaltending. And I look back and that was the best advice I ever got. Just stand there. They'll hit you. The net is 4x6. It's not moving. They'll find you. You don't have to go look for them. It was genius. I love
it. It basic, and for a young goalie, like, okay, I just need to get in a position where I'm going to make it easy for them to hit me. And absolutely. I love that the one thing he's telling you is you're working too hard, which translated means you're probably expending too much energy and right. you're making this a more simple puck. Game. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going back and forth. Well, I don't know if he'd be thinking about the game now. I mean, these guys are going back, forth, up, down. I mean, I'm tired of watching the game, and I don't even take a shift. You know, I'm exhausted after watching
the game. Yeah, the block and slide's a whole different avenue, right? Oh, I mean, it's a different game now.
I asked Mason, I said, I get it. This is so far out of my realm. And I said, you know, you played back in the day. I said, this is a whole different world. How in the heck? I don't know if I could do it.
Well, that's just thing, too. A lot of us, you were taller than me, but a lot of us, you know, I was 5'9". In high school, the block and slide doesn't work if you're a smaller goalie. I think the position has evolved to where the average goaltender now in the NHL is over 6 feet tall. Now, Marc-Andre Fleury kind of pushes the envelope because he, like you mentioned, still plays with some of the styles that we saw in the 80s and even the 90s. But most of these guys are big. They have the big gear, and they just block and slide on their knees. And it's a completely different position. At least it's coached that way. Completely different.
And there's a lot of it I don't understand, but that's a whole nother, and that's just an old guy talking, but I just like it. And I think back to what Worsley was saying, you're working too hard. You know, I don't understand a lot of it, but you know, God bless the Gumper. He was ahead of his time.
I've heard some great stories. I think the fitness and the way these guys eat, it's a, you know, Tommy's told me enough stories. Yeah. Tommy is, let me in on the way the Gumper prepared to play the game. And whatever he did, it worked. Like you mentioned, Hall of Fame guy, like this guy had figured it out, but it doesn't translate to the modern game. It was old school times 100, and it worked for Gump. For young people that don't understand maybe this realm, I do because I'm old enough, but the Canada Cup, 1976, the Canada Cup, for the youngsters out there that listen to Wooden Sticks, how do you enlighten them and what a big deal that was?
Oh, well, I remember, and you probably remember, well, maybe 72 was kind of the first summit series, I believe they called it. Yep. And that's when Canada was in, and they were getting a little sick and tired of hearing how good these Russians were. And the European game, and I think they wanted to figure, okay, come on over and we'll give you a little butt kick in and we'll call it a day. Well, it didn't go quite as planned. It worked out in the end, but there was a little problem. These guys are a lot better than you think they are.
Yep.
And I think that built up to 76, where they said, you know, we're going to settle this once and for all, because the Olympics, you know, they basically, the Russians were using professional players. Let's face reality. I mean, the 80 team, you know, the miracle on ice was a miracle on ice. Let's just call it what it was. So in 76, they said, okay, we're going to get the six best or whatever countries, and we're going to have a tournament. We're going to settle this once and for all. And I still remember, and this is the only time in my career where I remember my knees were almost knocking together. And I get the Bob Fulford is the coach of our team. Team USA. I was fortunate enough to make the team with a bunch of other Minnesota guys and all that. We had a good bunch of people, good players, but this is a step up. And I still remember looking down, and they're in the Montreal Forum. We're playing Canada, which is always exciting. And the place is going crazy, and it's a Saturday. Got to be a Saturday, of course. Can't be a Tuesday. No, got to be a Saturday. And they sing the national anthems and all that. And you got the names of the players on the back of the jerseys, and I'm looking. And all I see is Esposito, LaFleur, Orr, Potvin, Dion, on and on and on and on. I says, where does this end? Bobby Hall, on and on. And I said, what is this? What am I doing here? And I remember there was a face-off in the first period early in the game, and they're all over us. And I look up and I ask Andy Van Helleman, who was the referee at the time, and you got to know these refs, and they were all good guys. And you say, Andy, I says, I didn't hear, when did we get the penalty? He says, you didn't. I says, what are you talking about? I says, you see who's out here? And I look up and there's Phil Esposito. He's centering Marcel Dion, Bobby Hall, and you have Bobby Orr and Dennis Potvin on defense. Jeez. And says, and this isn't the power play. He says, nope, this is like the third line tonight. I said, oh, this is going to be fun. Anyway, we get, it's 3-0. Towards the end of the first period, and they're all over us. And I'm thinking, okay, 3 times 3, being a smart guy from Evelyn, that's 9. If I can keep them under 10, I'll be happy. But, you know, I might not even finish, and I don't want to get the hook. I don't want to get pulled. I don't want to do it. So we survived the first. And for some, we must have lulled them to sleep because we get it to 3-2 late in the game. And Daryl Sittler ends up scoring an open net goal. So we actually, it turned out pretty well. But as far as the team put together, I'll tell you, I know that Canada's had some great teams in the past with Gretzky and Lemieux and all that. But I think they had a group of 22 or 23 guys, and 19 of them ended up in the Hall of Fame off of that team. God. You get a picture of it, it's scary. And I'll be honest with you, I was scared before the game.
I don't blame you.
Embarrassed, not to get killed, but I was petrified. They could get 100 maybe. I don't know.
Well, and those fans in the forum, I think people forget. I watch enough games on TV as a kid. They were right on top of you. And then behind the benches, there was no plexiglass. So they literally could look right into the bench, talk right into were all over you in that arena. And that was the mecca of hockey. Like the Montreal Forum in the 70s and 80s was the Taj Mahal. Like that's where the game started and stopped.
Well, it's always funny when you went into the forum, you know, you go into these other buildings and it'd have Western Conference champions or whatever, Norse Division, and all these banners hanging. Well, that's pretty impressive. No, not Montreal. They had 24 Stanley Cup champions. That's it. Oh. No divisions, no conferences, no runner-ups.
Just the cups.
All champions, Stanley Cup champions, which I always thought, I'm not so sure.
Unbelievable. But, you were there, and you gave your team a chance to win. So you probably took the Gumpers' advice and let it hit you.
You can find, there's video on. In fact, they put out the, and somebody said, have you watched this? I said, watched it. I lived it. I says, I'm scared to death to look at it. And he says, well, let me just put it this way. You weren't afraid to challenge him. I says, well, I can remember that because I figured, I'm just going to go out there and stand, and hopefully they hit me.
Great advice for a young goalie.
I'm so far out of position that is crazy. But unless they don't go in, who cares?
Fantastic stuff, Worth. Pete Lopresti, this is Wooden Sticks here on the Talk North Pod Network. We've come to the end of the show, Pete. We've come to the hat trick hot seat. I've got 3 more questions. They're all easy. Yes. Nothing to panic about. Don't want those knees knocking. But I want to kind of get to know you away from the rink a little bit. We'll start with the hat trick hot seat question number 1. If you were going to go out to dinner tonight and have your very favorite meal, what would that meal consist of?
Well, being an Italian kid, it'd have to be some kind of pasta. Maybe a little chicken parmesan.
Does anyone like Italian food or pasta more than Lou Nanny?
No.
Oh my gosh, traveling with him, and he takes a couple of road trips every year with us and does the broadcast, and he's still as good as ever, but he loves Italian food as much as anybody I've ever met.
Him and Cesar Maniago took me out when you were in New York one time, and this is when The Godfather, you know, it's a couple of years old, this Godfather 2, and I should ask Louis what the name of that place is, probably still not there. But I still remember getting in the cab. We're driving down these side roads in New York, and all you do is dark, and all you see these big Cadillacs and Lincolns, black limos and all that. And we're here. And I'm looking, and I said, we're going to die. I'm going to die here tonight. Somebody's going to come. This is not good. And we walk in this little Italian place, and they knew Louis and Caesar and all that. Hey, blah, 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 blah. All this Italian yelling and screaming. And I'm looking around, and he says, what is going on? It looked like a scene out of The Godfather. I got to ask Louis what the name of that place was.
Things haven't changed. Yep. He took us to a similar place just a couple years ago on the Wild Beat. And Louis sat in the back, just like The Godfather, and had a table of like 12. And he was telling stories the entire time. And I mean, honestly, nothing's changed. I'm not surprised, Pete. I mean, he's still that guy. And I love him for it. He's the best. All right, number 2, and I don't know if they let you out of Eveleth. Maybe this didn't happen to you in Denver or beyond, but the venue and the band, the first concert that Pete Lopresti attended?
Concert, boy. Let me see. It'd be at the Duluth Arena.
Oh, yeah, the deck.
Yeah, the deck is brand new. 66, 67, yep. Somewhere in there. Got to be 67, 68. Because they had the NCAA finals there one year. And then the North Stars played, obviously, an exhibition game there. I'm trying to think. It could have been, might have been 69. It might have been Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Oh, yeah. Oh, possibly. Yeah. Right in the sweet spot. Good pick. Yep. We're going to go with it. It's like, again, podcast lore. We can't prove it wrong. So we're going to go with it at the deck in Duluth. Man, does that sound like fun? Holy cow.
Well, I knew it was the deck. Now, what? I'm almost, boy, I'll tell you, I might not be too far off.
I love it. Final question. And again, this is off the ice, not the arena, but NHL City, when you were a player, if you had a night off and could go out there and paint the town, what was your favorite city to visit in the National Hockey League?
Probably New York.
Yep.
Yeah. How do you not pick New York?
It's tough,
kid from
right?
Neville, Minnesota, New York. Are you kidding me? Really?
There's something everywhere. Like, you can't go anywhere without finding something fun to do. Like, it's
well, and it, back then it was a little rough down by Times Square and all that. You know, and right. I remember the first time I went to the Garden. And, you know, you just wallowed. You know, I'm a kid from up north. I'm going for a walk. You know. What are you doing down here? I'm just going for a walk. I don't think you should be here. Oh, okay. I don't see why. You know, I've seen rougher guys than this. You know? But New York would have to be. Yeah, there's pretty fun.
Great stuff. Well, Pete, can't thank you enough. Honestly, these North Star stories just, they fill my heart. A big part of my life as a youngster. And as I've mentioned to you, and I've been lucky enough to meet you, I think the last time I saw you was at the parade for the 80 Olympic team. Just a thrill to get to know some of my heroes, and you were one of them, and you were fantastic today. Thanks for taking the time.
Kevin, it's always a pleasure. Like I said, it's always nice to talk to another Ghoulie guard. And just remember, just stand there. You tell Marc-Andre Fleury that next time you talk.
I'm going to give him that advice when we get back to training camp.
Tell him, former Montreal Canadian, Hall of Famer. How bad can it be?
The Gump knows. The Gump knows all, and I'm going to let that flower know. We'll be right back after a short break here on Wooden Sticks.
Beta Bay Boat Club offers a limited number of season-long memberships in our private club and half-day or full-day pontoon boat rentals on Lake Minnetonka. Members have the opportunity to play on luxurious pontoon boats as well as a variety of well-appointed deck boats, speed boats, and offshore boats. Our daily pontoon boats are deluxe, custom-built boats with many amenities and comfortable seating for up to 14 people. Beta Bay Boat Club, Country Club Boating, 24 years in business and voted Minnesota's best 3 years in a row. Please visit us at betabayboatclub.com for more information. We look forward to welcoming you this summer.
We're back here on Wooden Sticks, and I've still got a smile on my face. You know, I think it's important, you know, when you grew up in Minnesota, like a lot of us have, you're going to have hockey heroes. And I've always loved the game. And I had a distinct passion for goaltending and goalies. And the love of my life as a kid was the Minnesota North Stars. And I think that's come out time and time again here on Wooden Sticks. And when your heroes live up to the hype, it just makes you feel good about the whole experience. And I met Pete years ago at a function in St. Paul, and I was just blown away, honestly, to meet him and to know that I grew up with all kinds of art projects. I painted pictures. I drew pictures. I cut out pictures from the newspaper, had these goalie collages that featured my heroes like Pete Lopresti on my wall, and then had a chance to meet him and find out what a genuinely wonderful human being he is. I think that came out today in the conversation. Down-to-earth guy, super modest, and honestly, super talented. This guy didn't get a ton of help. And I think the timing of when you get to the bigs always kind of shapes how that career goes. And he just got bombarded. He didn't want to say it today. You could tell he wasn't going to throw any of his teammates, even Fern Rivard, for not showering under the bus. But the North Stars struggled in the mid to late 70s. They didn't score a lot of goals. They gave up a ton of chances. And Pete was there to take that beating and did it quite well. I remember it vividly. And just so much fun to hear the stories about growing up in a household where your dad is an NHL legend, growing up in Eveleth, where there's a ton of pressure to play at the Eveleth Hippodrome and to be a part of high school hockey in Minnesota at a legendary program like Eveleth, then to go on and play at Denver. And we didn't get in a lot into the draft part of it, but you know this guy was good when he was drafted by two different teams from two different leagues. And I wish I had more time with Pete to get into that, but he was drafted 42nd overall by the North Stars and 45th overall by the Houston Aeros out of the WHA, where Gordie Howe played. So both teams thought enough of him to draft him fairly early, and he validated that with a solid career, playing for his hometown team and playing with some of his heroes that he listened to and watched from afar, you know, like the Goldie Shuffle, Bill Goldsworthy and Louis Nanny and Henry Boucher. Just so cool to connect with that former North Star today on Wooden Sticks. Look forward to another North Star-centric conversation next week. I've had a chance to connect with the great Mike Madonna, who works in the Wild organization. And for a lot of us that followed the North Stars, there were two magical runs. 81, led by Dino Cicerelli, and 91, led by Mike Madonna, who's gone on to become one of the greatest players in the history of the game, maybe the greatest American to ever put a pair of skates on and play in the National Hockey League. Phil Housley in that conversation as well, for sure. But Mike Madonna on the show next week here, really excited to go back and hear about that unbelievable run where the North Stars barely got in the playoffs, and in the first two rounds had to take on the number one and number two teams in the league, the Chicago Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues. And oh, by the way, getting through those two series, ended up facing the Edmonton Oilers, who were at the heat of their run in the after the late 80s with the four Stanley Cups and into the early 90s, as they kind of segued away from Wayne Gretzky, the team they were going to become. They were still dominant and a defending cup champion. And then eventually they go on to play against, of course, Mario Lemieux, Jaromir Jagr, and the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Stanley Cup. So next week it'll be Mike Madonna on the show. I'm really looking forward to that. Can't thank Pete LaPresti enough for being a part of it today. And thank you to the listeners as well for being a part of Wooden Sticks. Don't forget about Karen Cleary. We're here to elevate you folks. Get a hold of her, kcleary@talknorth.com. I'm Kevin Gorg. We'll talk to you soon. Right here on Talk North, you found us at Wooden Sticks.